This is your Calls Media Roundtable. I'm Rose Aguilar. As ICE has continued terrorizing citizens and non-citizens alike, their brutal assaults on American cities, most recently Minneapolis, have come to be defined by a common thread: extreme use of force. From deploying chemical weapons on protesters, to violently assaulting bystanders, to forcing their way into homes without warrants, ICE agents are widely being condemned by experts as, quote, out of control. A week after ICE agents shot and killed Renee Good as she attempted to drive away from them, a video has gone viral of another woman, Aaliyah Rahman, who is on her way to a doctor's appointment, being violently dragged out of her car by ICE agents as she repeatedly tells them that she's disabled and has autism. Here is a clip of Aaliyah Rahman talking about the assault and her time in ICE detention on CNN.
I experienced a very specific set of dehumanization practices during the 6 stages of detention and processing that I counted before I went unconscious and was taken out in an ambulance. During every one of those stages, I clocked ICE agents doing things that indicated they were not aware of what their job was or how to do it. Lots of, where's this? What do we do next? You know, agents had to stop at all 5 stages. Agents had to stop, ask someone else what to do, where basic things were. There were local staff who seemed to know some of that thing, but I distinctly heard 2 of them at one point say to each other, we don't want to step on ICE's toes when I was trying to get medical care. And the third is that the practices I experienced with like my own body, ears and eyes do not make sense to me as an immigration or public safety strategy, because they make things less safe. And honestly, I was not separated from a citizen of any other country. I think people believe this is just immigrants in there, and it is not. I was told that if I were a normal human, nothing would be a problem.
They said that to
you. We have now heard from, oh yeah. You know, when I asked for disability accommodations, and I said, did anybody bring my cane with me from the car? I need that to walk, not stand, but walk, because my balance is bad. They said, there's no canes here. They stood me up in leg irons and said, walk, push my back. Walk, you can do it. Nobody said, maybe we should find something else. There was no medical screening. I was never once asked for my ID, even told I was under arrest, never charged.
Wow.
And when they, I sat there and somebody finally noticed I was on, you know, not able to balance, even sitting. And they said, I think there might have been a wheelchair around here the other day, because I kept asking, can you at least get a wheelchair? People said, I don't even know if we have those. That's not the answer to that question. That's never should be happening. And when they put me in the wheelchair, finally, an officer said, wait, you were driving, right? So your legs do work.
That is Aaliyah Rahman talking to CNN about what happened when she was violently dragged out of her car by ICE agents in Minneapolis as she repeatedly told them that she's disabled and has autism. And then she was talking about her time in ICE detention. Protests, walkouts, and an economic blackout are happening right now in Minneapolis, where it is freezing. It is below 13. A new ProPublica investigation, co-written by Nicole Foy and Mackenzie Funk, further exposes ICE's violent and inhumane methods. It's called We Found More Than 40 Cases of Immigration Agents Using Banned Chokeholds and Other Moves That Can Cut Off Breathing. They write, an agent in Houston put a teenage citizen into a chokehold, wrapping his arm around the boy's neck, choking him so hard that his neck had red welts hours later. A black masked agent in Los Angeles pressed his knee into a woman's neck while she was handcuffed. She then appeared to pass out. An agent in Massachusetts jabbed his finger and thumb into the neck and arteries of a young father who refused to be separated from his wife and 1-year-old daughter. The man's eyes rolled back in his head and he started convulsing. Nicole Foy is ProPublica's Ansel Payne Fellow, reporting on immigration and labor. Hi, Nicole. Thank you and your colleagues for putting out this very disturbing and important piece of reporting. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
It's very hard to read about these things. You write that what you laid out here is far from complete because the government does not count how often it detains citizens or smashes through vehicle windows during immigration arrests. It doesn't publicly track how many times agents have choked civilians or otherwise inhibited their breathing or their blood flow. So you all gathered cases by searching legal filings, social media posts, and local press reports in English and Spanish. First, it's incredible that the government doesn't even track any of this. So tell us more about how you and your colleagues went about gathering all of this information.
Yeah, it's particularly incredible that it's not tracked because, you know, there was this sea change, you know, in many ways 6 years ago where in response to the murder of George Floyd, police departments and the federal government, federal law enforcement across the country banned similar tactics to the kneeling on his neck that we all watched. We all watched that video. And so there was federal bans placed eventually on using chokeholds, on using carotid restraints. And in cases where, you know, maybe other police departments would have also banned kneeling on people's necks or kneeling on their backs in ways that can really seriously injure someone or cut off breathing, even the federal government, including Department of Homeland Security, highly discouraged officers from using this tactic. Even they didn't even want them to be trained in this tactic. And yet, over and over again throughout this year, it's one of the things that you know, me and Mackenzie and other you know, people on staff who have been tracking these immigration raids, and certainly you see it a lot in the detention of U.S. citizens. We were repeatedly seeing officers kneeling on people's necks and using chokeholds that, you know, you can honestly kind of get desensitized to the extreme violence in some of these arrest videos, but almost every American has a pretty immediate reaction when you see an officer kneeling on someone's neck now. And we kept seeing officers doing this, even though what we would later learn is their own federal policy banned or highly discouraged these moves.
And we'll talk about how Congress it has been responding to this in a minute. But first, you showed footage of these violent incidents to 8 former police officers and law enforcement experts. Eric Ballier, who spent more than 2 decades working at DHS and Border Patrol, including in the first Trump administration, said, quote, "I arrested dozens upon dozens of drug traffickers, human smugglers, child molesters. Some of them will resist. I don't remember putting anybody in a chokehold, period." Danny Murphy, a former deputy commissioner of the Baltimore Police Department, said, "It's so clearly excessive. That's the kind of action that should get you fired." Mark Brown, a former police officer turned instructor who taught ICE agents, said DHS specifically was very big on no choking. We don't teach that. They were hardcore against it. So who is telling these agents that it's okay to do this?
That's a great question, and that's not honestly something we were able to completely understand, mostly because when we asked, you know, in addition to sending these all of these videos to these experts and asking them to, you know, explain to us, like, what's allowed, what's not, what's common practice and what's not, we also sent them to DHS. We sent them to their spokespeople and even to the Border Czar, Tom Homan, who had recently, right before our story published, gone on TV and said, anytime these agents do anything that is against policy, they absolutely will be investigated. That is something that we care about. And they, you know, we want to know if agents are doing something against policy. So we sent these videos to them and said, you have a policy that bans these dangerous chokeholds unless there's a call for the use of deadly force, and your training also has really discouraged the use of it. Why are your officers using this? And we didn't get any response beyond firmly supporting the actions of every officer, and no one could explain to us either What was the call for deadly force when you're arresting a 16-year-old and his dad, when you are pulling someone out of their vehicle? Like, what explain to us what led up to this. And we didn't get an answer, and honestly, we remain unclear about why this is something that DHS is allowing their officers to do, and we know how dangerous it can be. Best and really what our experts have said is that, this is the kind of thing that happens where not just when you have quotas, but when it's part of this larger department focus on roving patrols and very untargeted operations where, they may not know who they're going to encounter. They're not prepared to be in an environment where you're going down the street and suddenly you have, neighbors really upset at you for taking their neighbor. And they linked that to this type of action, but also this type that this these repeated instances of force that we're seeing play out around the country and certainly in Minneapolis. This is not what they are intended to be doing, usually, these officers. It's not something they've done much before this past year. And it's leading to these really violent, dangerous takedowns of both immigrants and US citizens.
Nicole, do you know when we see these masked agents fully armed in full-on military gear, wearing military gear, do we know how many of them have been with ICE for years and how many of them are brand new recruits?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I mean, it remains incredibly difficult to differentiate officers from each other because of the fact that they're masked. And that, of course, also makes it really hard to, track which officers are maybe repeatedly using these moves or repeatedly, acting in ways that, our experts called, truly, they called bad policing. So it's really difficult to tell, and certainly there has been a huge and well advertised, especially on the part of ICE and DHS, influx of recruits, and they have often a shorter training period than they have in the past. But the truth is that many of these, like for example, just when it comes to looking at chokeholds, we've been tracking this, and some of our earliest cases that we found are from early summer. Early summer 2025, months ago, before there really had been a significant time for many of these new officers, who are being added to ICE or being added to Border Patrol. It was really before they had really had a chance to hit many of them to hit the streets. And so, a number of these officers have been, employed in ICE and Border Patrol for some time. We certainly saw that in the case of the officer who shot Renee Good. And so I think, the instinct is to assume that these must be new officers who are acting this way. But the truth is that there's been a steady drumbeat of increasing levels of force used by agents across the country, across agencies. And I think really regardless of years of experience.
Nicole Foy is ProPublica's Ansel Payne Fellow. Nicole and Mackenzie Funk wrote a piece. We found more than 40 cases of immigration agents using banned chokeholds and other moves that can cut off breathing. They have so many devastating examples in their piece. Arnaldo Bazan, a 16-year-old, was put in a chokehold by ICE agents after violently tackling his father to the ground. Arnaldo is a citizen. His father is undocumented. As an ICE agent pressed a knee into his neck, he pleaded, "I was going to school," and told agents he was a citizen and a minor. That did not stop them. You have to wonder, Nicole, what are the long-lasting effects that these kind of violent assaults have on people? I mean, Arnaldo and his father, but a 16-year-old?
Yeah, I mean, this is a kid who should be thinking about his next soccer game, his going to prom, his homework. And instead, his sisters had to rush him to the hospital, to the emergency room when he was dropped off on his doorstep by agents who they didn't know. And found him with his shirt ripped and welts on his neck, and they didn't even know until they took him into the hospital, and the staff there said, were you put in a headlock? That takes some time to recover from. On top of that, his father was deported, and they were incredibly close. And that's something that, you know, this is kind of really a feature in so many of these stories, and certainly not just with these really forceful arrests, but there's so many children being separated from their parents right now, and that type of trauma is layered on top of these really violent arrests. But on top of that, the 16-year-old is left wondering how he's supposed to get justice. You know, our story kind of follows how, you know, he only tracked down his phone by finding it in a, you know, like kind of an electronics vending machine where you can sell their phones. And this is after he watched ICE officers take it away from him. You know, they've reached out to Houston PD for help filing, you know, filing a report because they believe that, you know, reporting that he was assaulted by an officer, and specifically using force that is a type of force that is banned. And they can't get an answer. And so on top of going through these traumatic events, many people are left without a clear avenue for seeking justice, because it is so difficult to not just identify the officers who may have done something like this to you, but also just it's difficult to sue federal agents because of the way you know, the way our laws and processes are set up. And so, you know, it's compiling levels of trauma on top of injuries and missing school or work, and, you know, long lasting effects. I think one man who was in a carotid restraint in Massachusetts reported, you know, in a lawsuit that he filed, that he was still having, you know, like really serious health effects that were making it difficult for him to work. So it's on top of all this stuff. And then just like a level of, you know, frustration, I think, that people can be treated this way, and it can be really difficult to prove your case and seek justice.
And I should say that there's a case of two people who lost their eyesight because they were shot in the face with what are called, quote, less lethal munitions. And this happened in Southern California. So there's just so much happening across the country when we're talking about these violent, violent tactics. Are you going to stay in touch with Arnaldo Bazan? It is so devastating to learn that he is now separated from his father, Arnolfo, who was deported. And is there any way of knowing why did they target them, and why was his father deported?
Yeah, I am still in pretty close touch with the family. I speak with his sister, Maria, a lot. What the family was told, what their father told them, is that after they don't quite know why they were pulled over. They don't know if they were watching the car when the two men were, you know, on the way to McDonald's. Like, that was, you know, his dad was taken into McDonald's before school. You know, they don't quite know why they were targeted, but they do know that what they say is after, you know, they had dropped off Arnaldo at his house, that his father at the detention center told his family that he was threatened with, officers threatened him with prosecuting and charging his son with assaulting an officer if he didn't agree to self-deport, to, you know, create a voluntary departure. And so, and they had no way of knowing this until, you know, the family tried to go see him after the weekend. And so, you know, but he had, the only criminal records that we could find for him was a very old misdemeanor, you know, driving under the influence charge. But it really is, again, like a pattern that we've seen in so many of these arrests, is that sometimes even these really dramatic uses of force are used against people who have no violent history that we can find, or that even that DHS can allege. They did not allege any level of, you know, violent criminal history for either Arnaldo or his father that would really make them feel like they would have to be prepared to use the level of deadly force that they decided to use. Mm.
We have just a couple of minutes left, Nicole. Given what you just laid out there, I wanted to ask you about what information the Department of Homeland Security is putting out, and then what are the facts? So I'm noticing on their Twitter page, they are posting photos of men that have been deported. And it's, here's one, removed, child sex predator. They tend to constantly say that these are child sex predators. Greg Bovino gave a press conference, the head of Border Patrol, last week. And he was just going over different cases. And he said, most of these guys are child sex predators. And now Homeland Security is claiming that because the murder rate has dropped in this country by pretty large numbers, they're claiming that this is because of the deportations that are happening. So that's what they're saying. But then if you look at ICE's data, Cato got their hands on it, 93% of people taken by ICE have no violent convictions. So what are your thoughts here about the actual facts?
Yeah, I think that there's been in multiple cases in our reporting over this past year, not just, you know, the stuff that, you know, my coworker Mackenzie and I have done on some of these detentions, but, you know, also that many other colleagues have done on people who have been accused of being associated with, you know, international criminal gangs, that those claims don't always come with evidence and sometimes are eventually dropped entirely. There are many tweets still active on the Department of Homeland Security's profiles that include information that has since been disproven. There are certainly people being detained and deported with really serious crimes or in criminal records, but it is very, you know, we treat DHS like any other source in that we have to fact check what they say. And there's been many times when they have said, well, someone was arrested for this claim, and that's the claim that they use for something like sex predator. And then you kind of see that, okay, well, they weren't convicted. They weren't, you know, charges were dropped. That's a very, you know, vague example. But the truth is that these charges don't always play out. And I also saw that repeatedly too when writing about the detention of U.S. citizens who ICE or Border Patrol claimed that the reason why they detained them was because they were assaulting an officer. But sometimes they never charged them with assaulting an officer. Or if they did charge them with assaulting an officer, they had to eventually ask for the case to be dismissed or a judge dismissed the case because no sufficient evidence was presented to prove those claims. So, you know, there's certainly people with really violent criminal records being deported. But as you just said, ICE's own data has said repeatedly that a large percentage of the people detained do not have violent criminal records, sometimes not even any criminal record at all. And so it's always important to fact check what the Department of Homeland Security says about many of these charges, because they are not always presenting the correct information.
Nicole Foy is ProPublica's Ansel Payne Fellow. Nicole and her colleague Mackenzie Funk wrote the piece, "We found more than 40 cases of immigration agents using banned chokeholds and other moves that can cut off breathing." Thank you for your work, Nicole, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.